Now, another Tailwind tip of the trail. Today we have the owner, inventor, and proprietor of Zero Shoes, Stephen Sashin.
Stephen, what do you have for us today?
Oh, gosh. I'm just marveling over the word proprietor. No one's ever...
I'm Googling it as we speak, Stephen.
Can you spell it?
Hey, before you get to your tip, tell us a little bit about what's been going on with you over at Zero Shoes.
Oh, my gosh. It's been crazy. You guys know we were on the television show Shark Tank, which
yeah.
repeated the show, which means we were probably in front of close to 9 million people.
That's about our audience, too, Stephen. So go ahead.
No, I mean at one time.
Oh.
Cumulatively, and all of their children and their grandchildren's children. Are you?
Yeah.
So that's been tremendous. I mean, sales have been going well. And more importantly, we've been doing a lot of product development. We've made some of the first improvements on huaraches in 15,000 years. We've kind of figured out how to make it simpler for people. There are some people who are intimidated by tying a knot. I understand that. So we've kind of solved that by getting rid of all the knots and complicated parts and bits. And there are some people who like more barefoot feel. Some people like less barefoot feel. We figured out solutions for both of those. And there's some people who wanted just some extra style. Hey, wait, I'm going to show something to you guys really quickly. Just a little blingy something or another.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's something that you'd want to wear. That has some color, some style.
So last time we talked to you, between the last time we talked to you and now, the name of your company has changed from Invisible Shoes to Zero Shoes. What is your new web address so that we can find this?
Well, if you go to invisibleshoe.com, it'll get redirected. Or if you go to Zero Shoes, xeroshoes.com, you'll find us there. We did a lot of name changes. My new name is Aretha Franklin. And we became Zero and we're findable there. And also on Facebook, facebook.com/zeroshoes, xeroshoes, and Twitter, and Pinterest, and YouTube, and everywhere you could look.
You're everywhere.
So what is your Tailwind tip for us today?
Experiment.
Oh,
it's one of the things that amazes me. People keep looking for an answer for something to do. They go, you know, what should I do about my stride rate, or where should I land on my foot, or what should I do with, you know, one pair of shoes or the other? And my tip of the day is experiment. The whole idea about running, especially trail running, in my opinion, is it should be fun. And the way you make it more fun is by having a kind of larger repertoire of things that you can do, different ways of moving, different ways of landing, different speeds, different cadences. And the only way you get that is by goofing around. And there's like a subset of experiment, which is exaggerate, because we usually live in a relatively narrow bandwidth of things that we do. You know, we move in a certain way. It's like you can recognize how someone walks from hundreds of yards away. You know, we all tend to do the same thing. So to break out and experiment well, you're going to have to do things that are very unusual, and they will feel really weird. So ironically, weird is not much different than normal for most people. So you've got to really exaggerate to get really weird to find this new repertoire of ways of moving.
Well, you're right about identifying people's gait, because how many times have you looked down the trail and from a distance, before you can recognize face, you go, oh, that's Faith, or that's Scott, or that's Stephen. I know how they carry their bodies.
Oh, no, it's even more fun. You know, the time you'll see someone standing and you don't know who they are, and as soon as they take one step, it's like, oh, yeah, that's Bob.
Yeah.
Yep, that's true.
Well, that's good stuff. So get weird, exaggerate, and don't be yourself to try something new to find out what might work.
And you may want to even be weird enough to go on to zeroshoes.com, buy yourself a pair of new huaraches, and run.
Well, I'm not going to say moss yet, because I'm going to say get yourself a 20-ounce bottle of Tailwind and go cruise that website and run
moss.
This episode's Petzl Nighttime Running Strategy is brought to us by Ryan Green, and it's actually a follow-up from our Nighttime Running Strategy that we had with Sally McRae. We're talking to Ryan about that, and he says, I have an additional tip. So, Ryan, hit us.
So, when you're running and you have your headlamp on and you don't need it anymore, and you turn around backwards, whatever you might need, and you turn your visor around backwards, because that helps hold it on your head. If you actually flip your visor upside down, so the bill is facing upwards, your Petzl headlamp will actually sit in the little bill portion of the visor and help further hold that on your head. So the headlamp will not pull on your head and give you, like you guys talked about, any sort of a headache or any sort of stress to your head. So turn the visor around when you don't need it anymore. Hold the, you know, put the light, flip it upside down, put the light back there, and it'll help hold it up on your head.
You know, that's what I love about trail running. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I just learned something new. I like it.
There's always a tweak.
Yeah.
You know, I ran with the Now last night because I was out there, and I've got to tell you that is a light that 305 lumen is serious business, Scott.
You were running with Rick last night. What did he think about the Now?
He loved it.
Was he impressed?
He wanted one Now.
And the Now has feelings. It changes when it gets closer or further from somebody.
Yeah. If you listen to your podcast, unlike shoes that you say do not have feelings, your light certainly does.
Your headlamp has feelings?
Yes, it does. It can bring some good feelings because running at night is a lot of fun. So go out and grab a Petzl headlamp. Turn your visor upside down when you're done running with it. And let it rest back there.
And run.
Moss.
Are we recording?
Faith, give me a little 1-2.
1-2.
1-3-4-5-6. Check.
I'm stretching my groin.
I feel vulnerable.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking.
And action. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Faith Goss.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today we have Vanessa Runs. That's her pseudonym.
Yes.
It's not really Runs. That would be really cool if your legal name was Runs, but
you'd
it's not.
You have no choice.
But we met.
I get that question a lot.
we met Vanessa via the social media that is going around. Somebody tagged us on Facebook or sent us a message and said, you know, you guys should interview Vanessa Runs. She just wrote a book. And so we contacted her quite a while ago, and she sent us a copy of the book, and we've been slowly going through it and devouring every word in the book. And we decided it was time to have Vanessa on the podcast. So welcome very much, Vanessa. Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Now, it sounds like Vanessa's in the room with us.
It does.
But she's not.
Where is she, Scott?
She is in the wonderful state that I want to go to and spend lots of time in.
State of?
Alaska.
Ah.
What are you doing in Alaska, Vanessa?
We're just running, just looking, pretty much going from town to town, looking for trails to run and exploring the area. It's just really, really beautiful up here and very rugged. We've just had a great time. We've been here for a couple weeks now and just kind of slowly drove up from San Diego. We left San Diego in February, so we've been driving really slowly and kind of exploring trails all the way up here, and right now we're in Anchorage.
Wow, what a trip.
And probably the envy of most people that are listening to this podcast, that you can take off and just go do this.
So
go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's just been really quite the experience, and it's exciting to be able to see a lot of trails and kind of see how the terrain changes as you go north. It's been quite the adventure for us.
How did you get into, I don't want to say adventure running, but how did you get into the thought of just taking off and leaving everything behind and going and driving and running? What one day were you guys just sitting around a campfire or something like that and say, let's just drive around the country and run?
Well, I originally had the idea, I guess, a couple years ago, back in San Diego. I went to journalism school and worked in the journalism industry for a couple years. I moved to San Diego and was working at active.com as one of their editors there. And just a lot of the work I was doing, I kind of started thinking, you know, a lot of this I could kind of do for myself or on my own, in my own time, and traveling. Like, I didn't really need to be in a set location. So I'm kind of lucky that with writing and the industry that I kind of have my background in is so flexible. And just you know, my passion with trail running and whatnot, it kind of just merged together and just thinking, you know, what would be ideal? What would I love to do? And as you said, you know, this would be the dream for so many people who listen to this podcast, and it was my dream as well. And we decided, well, let's just see what happens and try and make it happen.
You know, you hear that story time and time again that people ask themselves, if I could do anything and just take the courage and throw away whatever that was on the agenda for tomorrow and start doing that one thing. There's one thing for certain. If you never throw that old agenda away and head out on that course to do whatever it is that you love doing, you're never going to do it. So mm-hmm. I'm inspired by your enthusiasm, your courage, and you're willing to fulfill that dream.
Now, here's the what we want to get into the meat of this podcast. First of all, the name of her book is called The Summit Seeker by Vanessa Runs. And I assume that you could get that on Amazon. Where's the best place for our nation members to buy it, Vanessa?
Amazon would be the best place. You could even just Google, do an Amazon search or Google The Summit Seeker, and you can get it in hard copy or Kindle version or whatever you prefer, and just download it from there.
Okay. Well, what this book is really is just kind of the story of Vanessa's life up to this point and how running has been such a profound part of her life and how it intertwines with who she is now. I mean, she is a runner. Vanessa, tell us a little bit about, not to give away, you know, anything in the book necessarily, but give us kind of a brief understanding of your background and how you started running. And then, more importantly, how did you get into trail running?
So I started running back in 2007, just as your typical road runner wanting to try a 5K. I did actually started with a 10K just because of the scheduling worked out better that way. But I did, you know, the basic training plans, went to the running store, got fitted for shoes and all that goodness that you start out with. I did my first marathon, road marathon, and just really enjoyed long distances. Originally, I wanted to, as so many of us want to, qualify for Boston, get faster and whatnot. And kind of in between that goal, I got sidetracked by finding a few trails by my house and started running those and just instantly fell in love. At the time, I was living in Toronto, Canada, and we didn't have a really big trail running community. I didn't know anyone else who ran trails. The runners that I did know, I tried to get them out on trails, and they kind of were reluctant. They just didn't, you know, it just wasn't really their scene. So when I moved to San Diego, I found a really strong trail running community, and that's kind of when I just went full out, only trail, almost exclusively trails. And I ran my first ultra marathon and just started meeting a lot of people with the same passions, and that really made a big, big difference for me. And of course, the trails in San Diego were just nothing compared to what I had seen in Toronto. And that kind of also sparked my interest of traveling and wanting to explore more trails. And that's kind of where it took off.
You know, Vanessa, it reminds me of a very funny story that you tell when you first moved to San Diego. I can't remember exactly where you were working, but in an office complex, and you decided to, you know, get some of your office coworkers together and go for a run. And you were thinking going out for a trail run, and you ended up going around the parking lot a few times. Can you tell that story to us?
Yeah, so I was working at active.com. I think I'd just been in the office for maybe a week or so, or 2 weeks, and they have kind of group workouts or group runs that they do with employees during the week. And one of them said a scheduled or guided trail run or something like that. So I decided to give it a try, and, you know, I had such a great experience meeting other trail runners in San Diego and was really excited to meet some who worked in the building. And we got out, and it was, you know, a small group of people, and there was a leader, and the girl was talking about how we were going to do, like, negative splits. And I was just, I mean, I don't do negative split. I don't even wear a watch. I don't know, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing in that sense. So she said, well, I was the only one without, you know, without a GPS or without proper, I didn't even really have running shoes at the time because I had only been running in minimalist shoes in Toronto. And I had like kind of Luna sandal type shoes on. So the guy told me, you know, just find someone to stick with. And, you know, we're going to try and do these negative splits. So I thought, okay, you know, I'll just hang out in the back and whatnot. And it was just kind of a roadrunner's mentality. And I kind of say that stereotypically where, you know, you think of the roadrunner being with their watches and their blinders on and you're not really wanting to talk to people. You're just focused on your time and your goal. And it was very much like that. And we kind of just did loops. We ran out to a canyon that was nearby and, you know, I assumed that we'd go down into it. But it was kind of just like a little dirt space between the parking lot and the canyon. So kind of just the perimeter of the parking lot was where we ran. And I was just disappointed because I thought there would be trails down into the canyon. But it just kind of really helped me understand who I was as a runner and what I wanted as a runner. And just the fact that there's so much diversity in running and even within trail running, which is important to have. And I think there is a lot of richness in that too, but really helped me identify with what kind of thing I wanted to focus on.
How did you know that you wanted to be on the trail versus the dirt path next to the parking lot?
It's just so much more enjoyable for me. I think that's something that a lot of trail runners, you know, inherently feel and kind of understand. And it's not, I mean, one aspect for me is definitely being in nature, but then the other, another major aspect for me is also the camaraderie you get from other trail runners and other people who also love being in nature. So I think it's a combination of those two things that just heavily sway me over to the trail running community.
Vanessa, the title of your book is Summit Seeker. I imagine if I were to write a book, which I'm not, but if I was, I would put some thought and have some meaning behind my title. What's the meaning behind your title?
So I've had a couple questions about the title and a couple comments of people telling me, oh, I thought it would be a book about mountaineering. And that never occurred to me. So maybe, you know, that was a little confusing for some people. But for me, it's very much just kind of a story or a memoir, a story about moving up, both, you know, on the trail, whether it be climbing hills or climbing mountains, but also in your own personal life and experiences, just kind of always striving to be better and just that struggle we all have, I think, as humans to be better than we were last year or 2 years ago and put ourselves in a better position, and how to do that through running and through life.
You know, there's, as you explained that, some thoughts came to me that maybe that's one thing that is so awesome about running. So much in life we don't have control of. There's other people that contribute to the outcome. There are circumstances certainly beyond our control that determine the outcome. But with running, if you put some more time, some more effort, some more determination, you can affect the outcome. And it's somewhat predictable. Less training, less fit. More training, better results. And so maybe that's what's so appealing about the running summit that you're speaking of and life summit as part of the metaphor, that we're able to control some outcomes with running. And so we are attracted to it. Maybe that's why I like running. So just a thought.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes that control or that sense of control you have in trail running also spills out in your personal life. Like for me personally, when I took control of my trail running and learned, you know, I can do this, I can get better at this. In other areas of my life, I was also able to start feeling more control and just, you know, thinking, well, you know, if I can run this distance and this time, then maybe I can also, you know, do well in this other area of my life. So I think there are a lot of kind of analogies and similarities, which is kind of what I tried to write about in my book.
You know, I think you hit on a very important part of ultra running, and that is it develops confidence. That first 50K that you've run, or let's say it's a 50-mile or even 100-mile, you know, you go into that the first time thinking, I don't know whether I can do this or not. And you come away thinking, you know, I can do anything that I set my mind to.
Scott, even a 5K or a 10K, a 3-mile run. I remember my first 11-mile. I thought maybe I looked at the Guinness Book of Records to see if I set the mark at the longest, world's longest run.
11K.
11 miles must have been it, you know, but certainly it wasn't. You learn later that it was, you know, just a training run. But there, like you said, there's a great confidence builder out there. in training.
You know, one thing in your book, Vanessa, that is a common theme is what you have learned from running. And I one of my favorite parts of the book is you said, you know, you've run with a lot of amazing runners. You've been out on the trails. You're down in Southern California, which is jam-packed full of a lot of elite runners and very experienced runners. But you say that you learned, of all the stuff that you learned in running, you learned the most from Bilbo Baggins. Can you explain that?
Yeah.
Bilbo Baggins.
Who is Bilbo Baggins?
Oh, ready to learn. My gosh. Does she need to explain to you guys who Bilbo Baggins is?
I'm afraid
Vanessa,
so.
Vanessa, you need to school these people.
So Bilbo Baggins is the Hobbit from the book, of course, The Hobbit. And then if you haven't read the book, you've seen the movie, the Hobbit movie. But just a fictional children's book, really. But it was a book that I grew up as a total non-athletic, book-loving nerd. So I, was into The Hobbit I was into reading, really. And I read The Hobbit early on. And it was, I think, one of the first books I read that were just kind of fantasy adventure. And I think early on, it kind of sparked that sense of travel and adventure that I'm kind of pursuing now later in life. So Bilbo Baggins, I won't go into the story, or you can see the movie or read the book, but
there's no spoiler alerts for The Hobbit. I think we're
it's
well
been out
past
for
that.
A while.
Spoiler alert.
So I have a chapter in the book where I kind of run parallels between what I learned, what The Hobbit taught me about running, and it's a lot of kind of like quirky little things, but I think on a large scale, I really equated to a sense of adventure, which for me, trail running really brings to my life. And even before, we started this whole trip, going to Alaska and all that, just running trails for me was always adventurous. And the idea of exploring something new or going somewhere you've never gone before. And that's kind of what I took away from The Hobbit.
So do you travel all over the country on trips like this? Because I feel like before Alaska, you were somewhere else, correct?
Yeah, so we started, we bought the RV. We have like a small kind of 20-foot RV. It's pretty much the size of a large van. Like you can still fit in a regular parking spot. Mm-hmm. And we bought it back in August, September of last year. And did a few kind of long road trips. We went to Colorado, South Dakota, and then came back to California a couple times. And in February of this year, we left San Diego and just started going north. And now we're in Alaska, but we don't really have a set plan. We got rid of our home and all our possessions, so this is kind of home for us. After this, we're going to drive east. We're going to drive across Canada and then kind of come back down to San Diego and then go down into Mexico and South America. So we kind of have, these broad ideas of where we want to go, but no set plans. Pretty much, just keep moving and exploring what we can where we are.
So, Vanessa, who has more miles left on them, your RV or your bodies? That's what I want to know.
Oh, definitely the RV. Because what we'll do is we'll drive somewhere and then we'll maybe spend a few days there running as many trails as we can find. But those drives add up. They're pretty long.
How do you learn about the trail? Is it a common community there that leads you out there, or you just take a map or go on instinct?
Well, Facebook has been such a huge help, just having people connected from all over the world, and a lot of trails we run are from Facebook suggestions, people who live in the area. And the cool thing too is we can meet up with people who are in the area and who can kind of show us their trails. We also go online, like we'll go online and just search for, we'll usually search for hiking trails because that's what people call them online. They don't call them, running trails. Mm-hmm. So we'll search for hiking trails and go out and run trails like that. In some areas, there are more trail runners than others, and we might not, see another trail runner for a couple weeks. And other than that, in Alaska, it's been a little trickier. I mean, less tricky because there's trails everywhere, but it's harder to find things online about trails because there's just not, I think there's not enough people out here running trails that there's, you know, a huge online community about it. But there are trails everywhere. So out here, it's been more just kind of drive around, you see a trailhead, park and go explore it, and you have no idea how far it goes or where it goes or how it connects. And that's kind of part of the adventure too, to run out here.
I have to ask, you keep referring to your travel partner. Was he a runner before you guys got together, or what's the story behind that?
He was a runner a couple years before me. And he actually introduced me to trail running and ultra running. So he had run ultras before I, you know, even knew what an ultra was. But his name is Robert Shackelford, and we kind of travel around together. And he lived in San Diego, so when I moved there is when we kind of started our relationship. Before that, we were friends online. And he found me through my blog, funnily enough. He just kind of was Googling, I don't know, I guess running, just stumbled upon my blog somehow and had started following me online. And finally, we met up a year later, and now we're traveling around.
Can we go back to that spot where we were talking about the summit and the metaphor for life and all of those things? And I'm just going to throw a question out here for everyone to jump in on. And that is, what if we could take out the most difficult part of the run? Whether it's a training run or a race itself, whether you could remove the down, the painful, all the misery that we always talk about, if you could remove that completely from the sport, would you enjoy it more or less? Mm. Let's go. Since I can't see if you're ready to talk, Vanessa, and these two aren't leaning forward. Is anybody ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Faith is ready. Go, Faith.
I can tell you what Faith is going to say. Go ahead, though.
She wished she could take out the good parts.
No, I enjoy the struggle. I think it made me, when I started running, I had no idea what that was, and it opened up a side of my personality that I didn't know about, and I'm very thankful to have now. So I'd say, would I still run if it didn't have that bad stuff? Of course, but I think it makes me enjoy it more.
Hmm. Scott?
I like that pain. I like being able to overcome. That's probably even the feeling of overcoming that struggle is greater than the feeling of the struggle.
Mm-hmm. Vanessa, now your race resume has plenty of long runs on it, and races 100 miles and a 72-hour run, and you're well credentialed in going deep into the run. So I'm anxious to hear your comment.
I hear what you're saying about overcoming. I think that's a great point. Although I think sometimes failure too teaches you a lot when you're, you know, digging deep and you just don't have it in you. I'm going to say in the moment I'm sure you'd enjoy your run more if you weren't in pain or hurting. But I think the growth that you can take from that later, or even overcoming on race day itself, I think outweighs those negative feelings you have. And one thing I've learned too is that everyone has those negative. Well, one thing that helps me overcome the negative feelings is knowing that everyone is feeling them versus I'm the only person who's struggling on this hill. And I think that is something that I've learned also from the struggle that has made a huge difference. So I would say that I'd enjoy it more with the struggle in it. I think so much of it, of the victory in ultra running and trail running, is defined by struggle. So I think it's an important part of the sport.
How about you, Don?
Well, you know, I do everything I can try to stay out of that area, right? When you're on the run, you're battling everything. You know, should I drink more? Should I, you know, hop on my right foot a couple of times? What can I do to make this bad go away or prevent it from coming?
I've seen you gallop before.
I've tried it. And I've lay down on the trail if necessary. But as I look back on a race, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind are the struggles. I don't think, oh, that one spot where I was running effortlessly and I could see that view, that doesn't come to me. My immediate 1, 2, 3 thoughts are, man, that spot where we were running there, that was just awful. So I look back to the tough spots of the race, so it must be what attracts me, even though I desperately, you know, despise the pain and misery at the time.
I agree. And this is actually a good lead-in to one of the things that I learned in your book, Vanessa, that I thought was just fascinating, and that was some of the discussions or some of the things that you have learned from Malcolm Gladwell, who is the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times top book. You know, he wrote, did Outliers, mm-hmm. which is one of the books that you did. I can't remember the other two. There were two before that that were very good. But you mentioned an article that was in the New Yorker that Malcolm Gladwell wrote about Alberto Salazar. It's called Slackers, Alberto Salazar and the Art of Exhaustion. And you basically paraphrased that article in your book and talked about how Alberto Salazar explained that elite runners also feel pain. And in fact, he suggests that the elite runners know how to deal with pain more than we do as mid-backpackers. And the one thing that I thought was very interesting is when Malcolm was interviewing Alberto at the very end, he took his hand and put it over an open flame and just sat there and he said, "This hurts me just as much as it would hurt you, but," he says, "I can endure it." Hmm. Something like that.
That's deep.
So what did you learn from Malcolm Gladwell?
Well, that reference that you're talking about was such an epiphany for me, because before that, I always kind of assumed that the elites just weren't hurting as much, and that's why they could go faster. They were having an easier time. And it's so easy to put our own kind of struggles to attribute them to, you know, I haven't trained enough, or I'm just not good at this, or I'm not made to, you know, maybe run this distance. But the thought that we're all kind of struggling and we're all kind of feeling it, it's just a matter of, you know, some people endure, and others, you know, don't give up or just make excuses and don't continue. It just really changed my mindset in a lot of ways and kind of gave me the permission to push myself harder and just know, okay, I'm not the only one who's, you know, panting or out of breath or struggling on this hill, but I can push. It's okay. I'm not the only one who's feeling this.
You know, we recently had a podcast with Dominic Grossman, who just, by the way, just won Angeles Crest 100.
Again.
And he this year paced Timmy Olson at Western States. And one of the comments that he made was, for him, and he's an elite runner, it was amazing for him to watch Timmy Olson, you know, in the last third of the race. He said, there were hills there that 99.9% of runners would be walking. Mm-hmm. And he said, Timmy was just redlining it and just suffering, but he was powering up those hills and running up those hills. And Dominic was impressed with how much suffering Timmy Olson could go through. So mm-hmm. I think you're right on the money, Vanessa.
Mm-hmm. And I also, another thing that strikes me about just when you mentioned that about Tim Olson is just that they also have the, I guess the balls or just the courage to go fast on a race that long. Whereas, you know, early on, I'm always thinking, you know, I got to pace myself, I got to conserve and go slow, 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 which is, you know, great advice, of course. But sometimes I think the elites just kind of take those risks where they push themselves just a little bit past what other people are willing to do or past what we think is wise. So taking those risks, I think, is also part of enduring the pain.
And you've done a couple 100-mile races, and certainly I think there was a 24. Was there a 72?
72-hour.
A 72. So since you've kind of come to that revelation, how has this affected your training and racing?
I think it's given me permission to push harder and to try harder. At the same time, I think there's two aspects. There's that one part of it where I want to push hard and train harder and do better. And then there's the other aspect that kind of, you know, I want to slow down and just enjoy the view and all that. So it's kind of always a balance between those two things for me. Certainly, you know, running new trails, One thing I've noticed always traveling and running a new trail, it's hard to ever feel like you have it down. Like you, the first time you run a trail, it's always kind of hard. The second time you run it, you can see improvements and it's, you know, kind of easier on your brain just to kind of feel like you're doing better. But we kind of only have the experience now of running those trails for the first time and it just always feels so hard. And if we're able to stay longer, the second time we run that trail, I always feel better. So it's kind of just playing those mental games with yourself and just being aware, I think, of all those games we can play with our head has just really improved my performance overall.
I'd like to back up just a little bit if we can. And I'm going to take, because this is a conversation, I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to say that I don't think that pushing hard and just being blind to the effort is a good choice. Now, I think it's important to push yourself to find your potential. That's certainly important. But I think part of the rules of long-distance running is making sure that you're in a zone that you can exist for a long time. And just going out, as you said, Vanessa, balls to the wall could end up in disaster. At least it has for me in my experience. If I take off at a 5K pace and a 50K run, I'm gonna be done at 6K. That's all I've got. And I'm certain that you wouldn't, that I'm not attacking you on that piece. But I think we need to at least monitor effort level. And I know that if I went out and I ran at 70% effort, and I asked Timmy Olsen, Dominic Grossman, and Mike Morton, and the rest of those guys up front to run at their 70%, they'd be several miles ahead of me. So... Just anybody want to add to that because it's a discussion?
No, I think that's what training is about. And you shouldn't do this, I don't think, in every training run, but I think training runs are where you experiment on how hard you can push yourself and exist in that level. I also think that by taking up every once in a while to the red line, you find out what you're made of.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking that maybe too often we hold back and we give ourselves permission just to slog it out and not really push ourselves into an area that can be challenging based on I'm just going to be cautious and go easy all the time?
I think that's, in my humble opinion, I think I think especially in my experience, mm-hmm. I can get very, very
comfortable
going out and staying in that slow, slogging, migrating pace where I think that I would benefit from saying, today I'm going to push it. And you know, many runners are out there listening to this going, duh, that's speed training.
Right.
And I think that you should go out and push it and redline it so that you know how to cope with that pain.
Uh-huh.
Don and I, it's so fitting that we're having this discussion because Don and I had this exact discussion on the way to our work this morning about how I feel like lately on the trails, I'm just slogging it out. And after having this conversation, I just said to myself in my head, I give myself permission to run with people faster than me.
Ooh.
It's okay. You know, so often we're like, oh, I can't run with you. I can't keep up with you. I don't want to keep you back. But let's be selfish. I need to be selfish. And the only way I'm going to get faster is running with people that are faster than me. So I give myself permission to go out and run with faster people. And if they want to stick with me, fine. But it gives me somebody to chase after. And I'm not going to feel bad about it.
Yeah. Vanessa?
That definitely, I think, makes a huge difference, running with faster people and training with people who are faster than you, especially. And I agree that training is kind of where you want to explore those thresholds as opposed to, you know, randomly on race day. But that's one thing I think. Another thing we kind of miss from being in one location is finding people who can kind of push us a little further on a regular basis, because a lot of runs we'll do on our own. And you're right, it's just so easy to kind of, you know, lay back and take it easy and take a bunch of pictures, and you kind of forget how to get to that place of real kind of suffering and pushing yourself and feeling where you're pushing your limits. But yeah, that's definitely something that I've learned the benefits of doing.
How important do you think having a race on the schedule? Yes, I'm looking at you, Scott Warr. How important do you think having a race on calendar is important for your training intensity and staying regular? Again, open for the table discussion, but Vanessa, hit this one first.
You know, for me, before we started traveling, I would have said it's not important at all. I think I can train without races.
Uh-huh.
Now that we've gone a few months on the road, I think a race goal is really going to push me harder than I would push myself. Because again, we've kind of fallen. I mean, my thoughts when we started traveling was, you know, every weekend we're just going to go out, do like 30 mile, do like a 50K every weekend just for fun, just us. And, you know, there's no need for support or any of that. We don't need races. We can just go out and do these distances on our own. And we have the time to do it. And all that has been true. But it's just so much harder when you don't have a race that you're going for to spend all day. And even though you do it, you just don't cover as much mileage because you're kind of doing it as a tourist. You're just kind of seeing things and taking photos and taking your time. So for me, I mean, I think everyone probably has different ways of pushing themselves, and some people, you know, might do well without a race. I think for me, a race goal really helps push me.
I would go with the same thought process Vanessa has. I think a race goal really motivates me to have a purpose, which is, it really shouldn't be that way, but it that's just how it is for me. But I will say, after completing a race, it's really awesome not to think about something else for like at least a week, but I typically sign up for races right after the last race. I'm impulsive.
Scott Warr.
Oh, do you have a race on the calendar?
Are you
right
asking
now?
Me?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's very important to have a race. Do I have a race on the calendar right now? I did. I hadn't signed up for it, but now I'm
no, on calendar means money on the calendar.
I've not put money down on the race. I'm still hoping that I can, but we're going to have to play it by ear.
Mm. Got it.
But I think it's important because you're right. It does motivate you to get up in the morning and put in those training hours.
How many times have you said to the training partner that you're with, well, it's your race. Your race is coming up, so what do you want to do?
Yeah.
So it really does dictate training and location and distance. And I know that, Scott, you and I, because we run a lot in the morning, we have texted out of a run because we didn't have a race in front of us. It's like, yeah, we're okay. We'll wait. We'll go Thursday then. Okay, that sounds good.
There's no race we're training for. Let's sleep in.
Right. Sleeping is training. Didn't we discuss that? But we had
a good excuse.
We have to do training to use that excuse.
I've been overtraining lately.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
and you know, the other great thing about races that it occurs to me too is just the bonding of different people who are signed up for that same race. Like you just mentioned, you're training together, you're kind of all in the same mindset, you're freaking out together when the date gets closer. So you kind of have that trail camaraderie also through races.
True.
Okay, so I'm gonna move on just a little bit. One of the things that I was surprised, And I've been blessed with this at some level, not as much as you, but you explain in the book that you have never been injured running. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I don't want to jinx you.
I just knocked on wood.
Don just knocked on wood.
For you, Vanessa.
But you mentioned in your book, you said, someone at one point suggested that running talent comes in many different forms. For some, it was speed. For others, endurance, mm-hmm. and for others, the ability not to get injured. And I never thought about that before, but I think you're right. I mean, there are some people that I know that, you know, they just don't get hurt, and that's their talent, if you will, is not to get hurt. And I think you think that that's your talent, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm always kind of. I don't ever really know how to bring that up about me not getting injured, because on one hand, I think, you know, maybe it's a great positive thing that I'm doing right. On the other hand, maybe it's a sign that I'm not pushing myself hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's kind of a balance there. And I think there are so many talents in trail running because there's just so many aspects of trail running, and we kind of, you know, always praise speed, which is rightly so, I think. But there's just so many different ways to look at success. And you have these people who are kind of running a lot of miles, and they're not necessarily doing them really fast, but they're just kind of going all the time. And I think that's kind of a talent in itself. Like, you get these people who have, I don't know, how many hundred milers in a year. And then you have the elites that kind of focus on their goal race, and then they win it or do really well. So just kind of different ways to approach the sport. And I think there are so many aspects that people can be good at.
Yeah, let's think of a couple talents. I like that perspective. I like now to think that I may actually have a talent, which is good. We can explore. And some people, I think, just trail sense, right? Knowing which way to go, not getting lost. That could be a talent, and a pretty important one if you're trying to get somewhere, right? So that could be a great talent.
Another talent that I have always been envious of you, Don, is you don't get blisters.
Scott, if that changes, I'm gonna point to this podcast.
Knock on wood.
Another talent might be fluid. Some people need a ton of fluid to get from point A to B, and others can almost exist
camel.
On very little.
Be a
yeah.
Camel.
So many talents. Vanessa, I like your viewpoint. I may consider that I have a talent or two based on this new perspective. My socks match. That might be a talent.
There's so many things. I mean, some people are great at running in the heat. Others are great at running in the cold.
Yeah.
You know, your body adapts in so many different ways. And I'm pretty lucky as well that I can eat almost anything at any aid station, whereas I know people who can't. They really need, you know, to nail down their nutrition. So that's another aspect, too.
A strong stomach is a huge talent. A good person with conversation, somebody that can tell a story on the trail and distract people, that's a talent. A good pacer is a talent.
Management. The gift of gab.
The gift of gab. That's right. So lots of talents out there.
You said something in the book, narcissism in ultra running. Does it exist? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there's, at the time there was a bit of a debate going on about, you know, is ultra running, and I know you guys have talked about or mentioned this in the past too, is ultra running just a, you know, big selfish sport and very self-centered narcissistic people just run all day long without really thinking about, you know, their responsibilities or what other better things they could be doing with their time. And my kind of response to that was, I guess the act of running itself can be interpreted as kind of just, you know, independent and selfish in some ways. What you ultimately give back to the community of trail runners, and also just into the changes it makes to your life in general. Some of the stuff we were talking about earlier on, like it improves your confidence and helps in so many other areas of your life. I think those things are kind of key to giving back and to not being narcissistic. And I gave a bunch of examples of trail runners who just really are just so generous with their time and their gifts, and are just so humble. And we all know, you know, trail runners and elites even who are just marked by this humility, and just they're so friendly to anyone on the trail, which is kind of unique to our sport. At the same time, you know, I've certainly have seen people who appear to be narcissistic on the trail. My experience is that they don't usually last too long in the sport. I think there are better ways to get people to be impressed with you than to run ultras. easier ways. Yeah, so I don't think they last too long in the sport. So I think trail running is a sport. My final answer was no, I don't think it is narcissistic. But then, you know, there's always that kind of debate out there for people.
You know, Vanessa, one of the things that I actually got a smile out of and drew upon some experiences I've had is you said that, you know, at an ultra race, you got to be careful who you're talking to, because you may not know who you're talking to. And I thought back of when I ran Western States. I was standing at the start, you know, I was not even at the middle. I was near the back of the pack at the start, and I was just kind of standing there, you know, kind of minding my own business. I was scareder than I should have been. And I look over, and Hal Kerner's standing right next to me. And I said, "Hey, Hal." And he goes, "Hey, how's it going? You ready for this?" And he just talked to me like I was
going to be running with them, which I wasn't and never did. But I thought that was just, it was very surreal to be just standing there talking to a guy that has won Western States and all these other great races. And he's just he's an icon of our sport. And there's not that sense of elitism with our elites. You want to write that phrase down?
I'm
I think we need to look that one up and see if it's a real word. I agree. I think that for every person that tries to get into the sport or gets into the sport and is a self-centered person, there's one or two other trail runners that are out on the trail giving back to the trail through trail stewardship. And I mean, that's built into our sport, is the volunteer. I don't want to call it a requirement because yes, technically it's a requirement, but we'd be out there doing trail work whether or not it was a requirement or not. It's just the type of people that are involved in the heart of trail running.
Well, and I've heard Don say this on probably 3/4 of our podcasts.
I only contribute one thing. Go ahead.
And that is the trail humbles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you come into the sport and you do have a little bit of arrogance about you, very quickly you're going to either be humbled or you're going to be doing triathlons. I said that for you, Faith.
So you'll catch a toe and you'll face plant, right? That will definitely happen. You will bonk in ways that will make you a softer, gentler person. That will happen as well. You will have people help you at times that there was no hope for you, and all of a sudden you'll change. So we need those kind of people out on the trail to make this world a better place. I'm convinced of that. I just wanted to rant on
it.
Because 3/4 of the podcast.
I'll have you comment on this too that's related, Vanessa. You have a section in your book called "You're Not as Awesome as You Think You Are." Can you explain that?
Well, part of it goes back to what we were just talking about, but also part of that is the realization that there's always someone better than you out there, just more talented or faster or, better at, we were talking about all those talents. There's someone, better than you at any of those categories. And what kind of sparked that for me was this one experience I had the day before Across the Years timed race in Arizona. It's a 24-hour, 48, and 72-hour, as we all know. But it was the day before that race. We were out eating with a few friends, and there was this one guy at the table who was kind of just talking. He was talking to my friend Shauna, and my friend Shauna has run a ton of 100-milers. I don't know how many she's run. And she actually ended up winning the women's 48-hour division at Across the Years that year. But she just looks like a regular person off the street. Like, you can't tell by looking at her. And this guy was kind of just was bragging to her about his 50K or 50-mile. I don't remember what it was, but it was some kind of ultra that he did. And his accomplishments were, nowhere near what she had done. But he was kind of trying to belittle her a little, or kind of give her advice or tell her, when you get up to this level or my level, you can do this and this and this. And she just kind of sat there and listened. But I mean, I think the danger in that of just kind of having that attitude and bragging to someone, you just never know by looking at someone what they're capable of doing on a trail.
Vanessa, 72 hours. We can't let that slip by. When do you sleep? I mean, I feel like I need to know a little bit more about a 72-hour race.
On the third day, I didn't run the full 72 hours because by the third day, I stopped caring.
Yeah.
I just didn't. I couldn't take it anymore. And I always struggle with the looped courses just because I get so much out of kind of being in nature. And, if it's on a trail, I can deal with it better. Or if it's a longer loop, like a 15-miler, something like Javelina 100, I do better on those. But Across the Years is kind of more like a track style, not a real track, but you're not out in the mountains or anything. So I just struggled so much. We ended up doing, our real goal was just to get the 100-mile buckle. And we just kind of figured, we'll do the 72, see what we can do, just take it really easy. And once I got there, I kind of got really excited about it. And I thought, okay, you know, maybe I'll go for the 200-mile buckle. Hmm. We'll do 100 one day, 100 the next day. And then you have an extra day, you know, to in case you screw up. But we just ended on the first day. We just did 50 miles, and then I was so exhausted. I mean, it's kind of, I'm used to doing a lot of the technical trails as well, and just doing those kind of flatter courses just really takes a toll on my body. So after 50 miles, I went to bed and I just slept the whole night. So I slept a full, you know, 7-8 hours. I woke up the next day, I did another 50 miles, and then I was just wiped again. So that was kind of our day. We just did 50 miles for 2 days. And the last day, I did another 6 miles, and then I just decided I can't do this anymore. So I stopped. But it was so inspiring watching people who did run the full 72 hours. And what they did was they kind of took naps. They kind of schedule their time, and they kind of know their bodies, and they'll take 10 to 15 minute naps, every X number of hours. But for the 200 mile buckle and the 300 mile buckle, you pretty much have to be out there. You're really running almost the whole time. And the other part too, was we had so many friends out there. We kind of wanted to take it as a, you know, a social thing and just walk with them and hang out with people. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was going for anything more than what I did. So it's definitely an interesting experience. I don't think I'll do another 72 hour in that setting. It's a different, and again, going back to different talents, you know, some people do so much better, do so well on those timed courses. And I think that's more of a struggle for me.
Yeah. You know, I'd never consider doing 72 hours, and I still think I'm not considering doing it. That's just crazy. But, you know, talking about it and being challenged, if there's a buckle, a jacket, and a bandana, all three I could get, then I might think about it. Mm-hmm. I've been drug into similar situations for a jacket.
Vanessa, thank you very much. I for all of you out there, I just looked up her book on Amazon.com. You can get the paperback version for $11.69. The Kindle version is only $5, $4.99. Vanessa needs fuel for her RV. Please go on, get the book, read it. It's actually a very easy, light read. For those of you who can have the attention span much longer than my gnat attention span, you could probably read it in a day or two. It's taken me about 3 months. I think that's when I first got it from you, Vanessa. But it's a very good read and very inspirational. There's some funny stories there. And you learn a little bit about Vanessa.
Very good.
So go. You can actually learn more. She has a blog at www.vanessaruns.com. I know she's active on Facebook and Twitter. We'll link all those at the podcast notes.
Vanessa, are you sending some pictures of your adventures and the places you've been and the runs that you're taking?
Yeah, we've mostly been posting them on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And my Facebook account, I think, is open. So I think anyone can kind of see the pictures, even though we're not friends. So yeah, you can definitely check that out.
You know, that reminds me, when you were talking about your adventure, I thought, you know what Vanessa needs to do? She needs to make a coffee book. You know, a coffee table book.
Of all the different runs and trails.
Of all the images and trails that you're running. I think that would be very interesting. So if you want to throw some royalties down to Trail Runner Nation, that would be great.
She's already thought of that idea, Scott. Too late. She's working on it.
She's smarter than us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Vanessa, will you be going out for a run this evening?
I think we will. Yeah, we'll try. There's a few trails around this area that we're going to see if we can check out.
What time does it get dark up there now?
Oh, probably around 11 or 12.
Wow. I got to go to Alaska. Dang, I need to go to Alaska.
All right, Scott. We'll make a break in the podcast schedule, get you up to Alaska. We'll become a summit seeker like Vanessa runs. So go out and run.
Moss.